Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 188. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And here we are, the season finale, Chris.
This is it.
Our top 10 films of the year. You know, we already went over our awards, our honorable mentions. There was a lot of stuff this year, and now we're going to celebrate what we think was our very best and ranked and all that. I'm excited. Let's just get to it, Chris.
All right.
What's your number 10?
Creed 2.
All right.
We've talked a lot about this over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Not as good as the first Creed, but a decent follow-up to not just that film, but also as a continuation of and a look back at 30 years later on the events of Rocky IV.
Yeah, it's like a sequel to both of them. Yeah. Like it feels like a straight sequel to Rocky IV, but it's like so was Creed. It's so weird. Anyway,
right. Sorry. Like it works very well as both. And I mean I like these characters. I really like Michael B. Jordan as Adonis. If this is the end of Sylvester Stallone being in these films, and I'm sure they're going to continue on with them, but if this is the end of that, this was a good send off for him.
Yeah,
we have sent him off before, but
yeah, we've been sending him off since 1986 or somewhere thereabouts.
Yeah, but I am okay with that if this is how that's supposed to end that run for him. The boxing scenes are good. You know, the sports stuff, it is more of a general sports movie, I guess, but there's also a lot of learning to overcome your issues and seeing that you're not invincible in a way. So there's a lot going on in this film, and I think it's very touching. I like what they do with the Dragos. They're not really the villains here, right? Like, I mean, they are in a way. Like they're played that way from a sports perspective.
They're the opponent.
Yeah,
but they're not made to be villains,
right? They're not the cartoonish villain that
Drago was. Yeah,
wasn't, and like they're real. They're yeah. real people with real problems, and Adonis is dealing with real problems as well, and how he overcomes them, and how the Dragos overcome their issues. It all works really well. It's an entertaining blockbuster.
I could see, like, any bad thing someone has to say about Creed 2, I could see where they're coming from. Like, I get it, but at the same time, I just liked those characters so much, and I liked, like, it maintained a certain level of quality and a certain vibe from Creed 1
yeah.
that carried over to this. And so it was, like, nice to spend more time in Rocky Land or Creed Land or whatever you want, like, this kind of hybrid. And, like, even though I thought Creed 2, it's not like a perfect movie, but it was like it could have been a million times worse. They did a lot of things right too, like you already mentioned, one of the things I liked was how they treat the Dragos. So, anyways, I like Creed 2. I keep thinking about. I want to have comments about this one podcast, but I'm just gonna leave it.
Don't.
My number 10, Chris, is Mandy from
Nice.
Writer director Panos Cosmatos, and this movie is not gonna be for everyone, and it wasn't even for you entirely. Nope. It's a weird movie. It's really slow. It's nuts. Like, it's a drug movie, honestly. It's like, that's what it is. Like, the movie kind of, like, replicates how watching a film on acid feels. Like, where you just kind of feel disconnected from it, and shit's blurring. And it's more about kind of a, like, a vibe or an overall sensation that it gives you than anything. And that's kind of what Mandy is. And for that, I'm kind of, like, impressed by it. And, like, you know, it does a lot of weird shit. Like, I think there's a show, like, it show, like, near, like, end of the movie, it shows a title card that says Mandy, and then it keeps, like, stretching out and almost becomes, like, branches or veins that spread out to the edge of the picture. Like, out of nowhere, it's like, oh, now we decided to show the title of the film. Just weird shit like that. We're just like, okay. So yeah, it's really like, it's the only film on my list probably that I recommend with like reservations, you know, like, hey, you might not like this. And there's other films on my list you might not like, but this is the only one that I'm like, I'm even aware.
Yeah. This is one of those ones. Like I feel that like,
but no matter, you didn't hate it. You were just like, it's fucking weird, dude.
Yeah,
like,
it's a fucking weird film. And it's, I think,
not satisfying,
like, really. There are things to like about it. But yeah, it is a weird, disconnected journey. And, you know, even if you are very confident, like, that you know somebody's tastes, recommending
it might not click. Them
is going to be, it's going to be difficult because it's such a weird thing.
Like, you could watch the trailer for this thing, I think, and be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm on board. And then when you watch it, you're like, wait, that was really slow and weird.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that's something that, I mean, it's probably for a different day discussion on movie marketing and how, especially with horror films, independent horror films in recent memory, these trailers are selling something that they are not delivering. Once you,
yeah, I guess that could, is a conversation. I think I know where you're going with that, but like, I don't know. But it's like this movie does have all the weird, crazy shit in it.
Yeah, it's there. It's just, but like,
it's just, it's not how you expect it to be presented, I guess. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's a slower film. That manic energy is there. Like, Nick Cage is in this.
Yeah,
it just is further spaced out than one would expect.
But it's like, if you, I don't know, at the very least, there's things you have to appreciate about it. Like, it has a vision, it has a sense of style that, like, it knows what it's trying to do. Whether you like it or not is one thing. So that's where, and I'm like, and again, I'm almost in the middle where I'm like, I get why people won't like it, and I'm not, like, entertained by it, but I'm fascinated by this fucking movie. So, that's why it's my number 10.
Nice.
What is your number 9 film of 2018?
My number 9 film is a horror film, I guess, in a way. It's a Quiet Place. John Krasinski. Is this his debut film?
No, he did a film before that I have not seen. I can't remember the name of.
Anyway, not somebody I would, you know, have assumed would be able to pull off a horror film.
It is his first horror film.
And I mean, it's such an interesting thing because there's almost zero dialogue throughout this entire film.
Yeah.
The way it. Watching this film in a theater, which I think is probably I have not seen it since then, but watching it in a theater was unsettling because of the silence that it permeates throughout the film.
It's almost like you're all becoming tense together then too, because of that. You know what I mean? Like, everyone is like kind of holding their breath together, like,
yeah. And like
locking up.
You don't want to eat your popcorn or take a sip of that drink because it's going to disturb the atmosphere that has settled. And it, it, the film just is able to set that atmosphere. And I think it works best in a theater. I will be interested if I watch with some people how they feel about it in like a living room type situation. But anyway, for the most part, it is super tense. The monsters are scary. It has some good action sequences. It ends on a ends a little goofy and maybe on more of a badass, you know, side of things than one would expect. But I really like it. I think it's a fantastic little film.
There's some good emotional beats near the end too.
Yeah, and I think one other thing we should probably mention is that the daughter in the film is legitimately deaf.
Yeah.
And that is a ongoing theme throughout the film, not just that like they can't talk because the monsters use echolocation, but her being deaf is an actionable
it's part of it's yeah. part of the story, yeah.
But she gives a great performance as well.
You know, you may like it's so funny because it's not in my top 10 and it wasn't on my honorable mentions, but I also really like that movie too. I like everything you had to say about it, I agree with. So I guess thank you for
reminding you about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that I forgot, I was just, I don't know. Like, it just, for me, I guess I love these other ones more, I guess. I mean, it goes to show that the year ended up being, in my opinion, really good.
Yeah.
My number 9 is a horror film as well. Once again, called The Ritual. Which I guess, like, if you do look it up, it will say it's 2017. But it was not, like, in effect released here. Till this year.
Yeah, that was probably like, I mean, it, even if it was in the US or North America, it was probably just festivals.
So, in my opinion, like, that does not, like, when everyone who would have seen it is in 2018, it makes it 2018 to me.
Yeah.
And it was released on Netflix in, I think, February of 2018. So, anyways, it's, to me, it feels a lot like a Stephen King story. Kind of mixed with like Blair Witch and the Wicker Man or something, like, there's like a human element to the horror. It's built off of an actual human story first, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a lot of like, say, their dumb slasher films, the characters are cardboard cutouts. Here, it's, you know, it's about people dealing with guilt and then they run into horror. Which, you know, I think, it, you know, some people call it elevated horror. It's just good. It's a good horror movie, I think. And I think this one, like, I don't understand. I mean, it's on Netflix, so everyone in the fucking world could fucking watch it, and it's still not, like, a huge hit. Like, I don't, for my money, like, I was, like, totally blown away when I saw it, like, when they finally show the monster in this, I'm like, that was one of the coolest looking monsters I've ever seen. But I guess, yeah. I don't know, maybe I'm alone or what? Like,
no,
I had it on your honorable mentions.
It was on my honorable mentions list. There's a lot of like really cool things that that film does. And we talked about it last on the honorable mentions show, I think. Just that awesome shot through the forest.
Yeah, with the fluorescent lighting. Like, to me, it's on this list, and Hereditary is not. So that's saying something. And I honestly did. There was like part of me that was like, you should give best horror film to The Ritual because it's an original film, like it's a new film, and it has a new monster. But you know, I can't separate my love for Halloween. So, but The Ritual is great. It should be a bigger deal than it apparently is. But anyways, what's your number 8, Chris?
My number 8 is A Simple Favor, which is a Paul Feig, starring Anna Kendrick and a Blake Lively. It's basically Gone Girl light, or Gone Girl with a comedic tinge to it. It's a fun movie. Not quite as dark as Gone Girl was, although the ending a bit shocking, but I will sit down and watch anything with Anna Kendrick in it. She has a great stage presence, a great screen presence for that she brings. She's just charismatic, and by Blake Lively, maybe less.
Yes, I like her.
I do. I like her as well, but she does not have the acting chops that some of the people in this film do have. But
I like her. That's
just, she plays a she plays the super witch very well, in this and just I can't recommend this enough. Like, if you enjoy Gone Girl and want something maybe not quite as dark and as twisted, but with more fun to it as well. A Simple Favor is quite good.
I remember you telling me about this movie, and I forgot to ever like add it to my queue or whatever. Like, so I just added it on Netflix. I put it at the top, and unfortunately, Chris, it's very long wait.
Yeah.
So this might end up being an Amazon rental. Yeah. And every time I do an Amazon rental, I'm like, you know what? You need to drop the Netflix discs. You need to just switch to rent the movies you want to see and catch everything else when it comes free to streaming. And I mean, I'm getting closer and closer to that every day. It's just like, I will say this about Netflix. Like, if you still get the DVDs from them, is like, they do have probably the most complete library of stuff you could think of. So it's like, there are even things that you cannot rent on Amazon that are on, you know, DVD
version. Right. There are still things that are, have not gone digital yet, which is mind boggling to me, but it is true.
And on top of that, like, you know, with Amazon, you're renting movies that way, you're paying for each individual one. With Netflix, you can get it for a pretty cheap amount every month. It's like, I think $10 to have the disc version with it. So it's like, it's not, you know, it's nothing outrageous.
There's that immediacy, though. Like, if you're like, I want this right now.
The turnover is like, back in the day, it used to be mind blowing that you could like put a disc in the mail and then like 2 days later, essentially, you'd have a new one.
Right.
Okay, but that the age we live in now, that's not impressive anymore. Yeah, you can rent anything immediately. So yeah, I hear you. Anyways,
what do you got at number eight?
My number eight is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs from the Coen brothers. I love the Coens. I love Westerns. I love anthologies. This is all of the above, and I think done pretty well, and it looks beautiful. Some of the short stories I think really stand out. I really love The Prospector, you know, Digging for Gold. I really love the Buster Scruggs one. We already said, I think, last episode that I would love a whole movie of Buster Scruggs. I love The Girl Who Got Rattled. It has a really cool ending. I think generally, though, all the short stories are pretty good. I think maybe the last one I don't love as much, but it was like, just kind of capping off a really fun journey, at least for me. I really enjoyed it. And it looked beautiful, so that's why it's my number eight.
Nice.
Let's just move along to number seven. Chris, what do you got?
Number seven, I have Widows, Steve McQueen's crime drama heist movie about some widows that end up in a bad situation and have to pull off one last job. Well, pull off the last job that their husbands would have done to get the money to get themselves in the clear. This cast is fucking insane. Viola Davis, Liam Neeson, John Bernthal, Robert Duvall, Colin Farrell, David Kaluuya. Like, it just goes on. And there are things about it that maybe don't quite work out. I mean, we talked about it with your best villain. David Kaluuya not given a ton of time to do what he needs to do here.
Also, he needed to suffer more.
Yes, like his death is, while brutal, and it's just sudden and kind of out of place for what's going on. But yeah, I was captivated throughout the whole thing. I know that you did not like the twist, I guess, going in, but
no,
I enjoyed it to a point.
It makes me want to enjoy it more as a B movie when it has like this nice pedigree. I guess you can enjoy it like that way, but it's just like
good.
It makes it more of a B movie, I think. Anyways,
it is a bit, mystery novel cliche. Like,
yeah,
guy comes out of the closet, poof, I'm here. But I enjoyed where it went with that. It doesn't necessarily need it, but I thought it added a little flair to it. And I enjoy all four of those women that are in this film. So all around good time.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. So I it was on my honorable mentions, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I do like the whole, political angle surrounding the core story, like this kind of world building it does with Chicago, I thought was pretty cool.
Yes.
My number 7 is Minding the Gap, which we talked about last episode, and I kind of went on for a little bit, but just really cool. Like, this little Rockford, Illinois kid who wanted to be a filmmaker, capturing him and his friends growing up, and kind of manages to be about like a lot of things at once. Like, it's not overly long, and it's never melodramatic or anything. It's real shit that happens to people as they get older, and real problems that people deal with in real life, which is messy. It's just kind of about that. It's kind of about navigating that territory. It's just a really nice documentary. Again, I highly recommend it, Chris. You got Hulu, right?
I do.
Yeah, give it a shot. It's. I'd be interested to see what you think of it. Like, maybe if I'm inflating it in my head because I know other people liked it, and because it has that hometown angle type thing where I want to like it.
Kind of location bias.
Yeah. But I think even my girlfriend was like, "Yeah, that's pretty good." So I don't know. That's my number 7.
Nice.
What is your number 6, Chris?
My number 6 is Damien Chazelle's First Man. I love space. I love space history. Okay. And this is a great look at that trek that we as humanity took to get to the moon. But it's so much deeper than that, with Claire Foy kind of being this grounding, being the humanity of the entire thing. And this event of him losing his daughter, and Claire Foy, also losing her daughter early on, and that kind of being this driving force for him throughout the entire, his entire trek to get to the moon. It's touching. It has a very good ending, I think. And there's also a sense of claustrophobia to.
Yeah.
The shots that are done, often in space movies, people like to pull back and kind of show the vastness of it. What Chazelle does here is, and there are some great shots as well. Don't get me wrong of space itself, but in a lot of cases, he likes to put you in to the claustrophobic and closed in situations that these astronauts were in.
And it feels like they're in like this cheap little like thing.
It's like a Coke can with some wires. Like
it's like you feel like you could look through a hole in the floor and there's space. Like a hole that had been rusted out of the bottom of this metal can. Like that's how it feels. Like they're bouncing around on a metal can in space.
Yeah, and it's like, and the only thing keeping them alive is you know their own ingenuity on the fly and science, like. It's nuts. I was enraptured throughout the. I mean, it's a long film too. It's almost 2.5 hours long. I loved it.
I really liked it too. It's a movie that like I thought about for a long time after. Like, it didn't make my top 10, but like I kept thinking about. It. I even wrote about it a little bit after because I like really admired the ending of it. Like how. It was just making a statement about like distance between people. I took it as between people in general, but I think you kind of responded to what I wrote where you were like, it's mostly just his issues. So I'm like, yeah, he's worse than most people. Yeah. I guess. But there's a certain truth to the fact that like you can't really know anyone's true like total self. Like
sure.
Only they know that. It's like an interesting thing to be expressing in this movie about, you know, really on the surface, like any other director, it would just be about how, like how awesome it is that we got to the moon.
Right.
And here, like Chazelle is choosing to tell a story about like how it was like one man's desperate mission to like fucking somehow say goodbye to his daughter, essentially. Like, you know, he found like this really human angle, and you know, whatever. Maybe he's dramatizing things that aren't 100% true. I don't care. Does it work for the movie? And yes, for me, it does. Like I found it to be a really interesting way to do a film like this.
Yep.
And I'll make one last appeal to you on this. See, like you really liked First Man, and you pretty much enjoyed La La Land, right?
I did. I will see Whiplash at some point, Jeff. I promise.
This is going to be a running joke on this show. And so finally, when you see it, we're going to do a whole episode on Whiplash. All right. But my number 6 was Three Identical Strangers. Another documentary. So there's 2 for you, Chris.
There you go.
This one is, I mean... It's about identical twins finding each other after being separated at birth. So it's three identical twins who, at the age of like 20 years old, really randomly kind of find each other. Like, two of them find each other, a news article is written about it, and the third one reads that news article. Like, it becomes national news, and he finds the third. And as the film goes on, you find out, like, why they were separated like that without them knowing. And I mean, can I say it or like,
yeah,
like you find out like it was like a fucking science experiment.
Whew.
Like to see like, all right, we have three people with the same genes. Like if we separate them and we pick out three really separate parents, like parents that will raise them differently, like, whether they'll become different people, like whether that will have an effect, like, and like that's just like part of it.
And it's that fucked up.
It's yeah, like, and then like a secret thing that was done, and you know, super unethical, etc. Like, and then the fact that it had an adverse effect on their lives because like twins should not be separated. So yeah, like the movie just kind of blew me away every 3 minutes with like revelations like that where you're like, wait, what? And then, oh shit, like wait, oh no, it like ruined their lives. Like, and you're just like, holy shit, like the whole weight of the movie kind of falls on you as it goes on, where you're like, this is insane. And then at the very end of the film, they're like, and the crazy thing is, you could be walking down the street and you could run into your twin and it could happen to you. And I was like, and it just cuts to credits. And I was like, what? Like, it was just like, I had like, I'm having like a visceral reaction, like remembering it, where I was just like, I was just like, wow. Like, I bounced out of my chair, like, that was a great fucking movie. So,
yes. As you can tell, that sounds nuts.
So it's like, it's weird. That's like a movie where normally when you talk about it, you can't explain why it's so cool. So, spoilers. But yeah, it's a really good movie. What was your number five, Chris?
My number five is Mission Impossible Fallout. It's we talked about it. It's the best summer movie, summer blockbuster of the year, filled with awesome set pieces that Tom Cruise did, like, which is nuts. That little man does not age at all. I love the cast. I enjoy the Mission Impossible movies across the board, except for maybe two, which is a weird film. But I enjoy this cast. I enjoy seeing Ving Rhames, his interaction with Tom Cruise. The rest of the team they've assembled is fun and enjoyable. But it is a nonstop thrill ride from start to finish. It is what an action movie should be. It is what a spy movie should be. And as we said in the last episode, it is what a summer movie should be as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll build up on that a little bit because we're going to be talking about that more. My number five is The Night Comes for Us, which I think didn't click for you entirely.
No, that was, I think it was a physically draining film to watch.
I love that. Like, it's just, to me, like, the action, the choreography of the action and the fights and the level of violence and the level of gore, really impressive, even if it was like for 2 minutes of the film. But the fact that it's like probably an hour and 45 minutes of its 2 hour running time is pretty insane.
It's impressive to say the least.
Yeah. Like, and it's also a gorgeous looking film. Like, with the gore effects are really spectacular and great looking. Like, it's a movie that I really want to buy in 4K, but unfortunately it's a Netflix film. So I guess it's up in the air whether, like, I don't think they've ever released one of their films on 4K or even Blu-ray. I have no idea. I know they've done, like, I think House of Cards has come out on disc, right?
Right.
But, like, the odds of us getting this, like, I'm telling you, I want this thing in 4K. I mean, I guess I could just upgrade my Netflix to 4K and I will always have it, but it doesn't feel the same. Anyways, I really love it. I know it's going to definitely be a bit much for most people. But if this, like, let me put it this way, if you love The Raid, like, if you think The Raid is the shit, The Raid ain't shit compared to The Night Comes for Us, in my opinion. So, and that's about as best I can say. It's like, it sucks. That's either gonna, it's either gonna work for you or not. I mean, like, you didn't love The Raid and then hate this, did you?
No. Like, I think that The Raid was fine. Like, I was not, like, blown away by The Raid either. Same issue, I think, is just that it's like nonstop action at it's some like
all
point,
that yeah,
it just becomes sensory overload and becomes draining.
Well, it's like, I mean, you do expect a certain rhythm from a film, and it's like, this is not that. It's just
there's no rhythm.
We're just gonna wow you, like, we're gonna wow you for 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's like, we're gonna turn it up to 11, and we're not gonna stop. Like, we're just blasting it at you.
And it's like, to me, I kind of like that heavy metal. Like, once in a while, like, just, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah, sure.
Anyways, what's your number four, Chris?
My number four is a film that kind of threw things into a tizzy this past week for me. It's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I knew it was happening.
It's the best animated film of the year. It is the best Spider-Man film ever to have been made, and it is the best superhero movie of the year, which I'm going to give a caveat to. I've not seen Aquaman yet. I don't expect Aquaman to surpass this film, but I have not seen Aquaman yet.
I mean, let me put it this way. I would bet my house.
But also,
not happening.
Also, that is Aquaman.
Yeah, and this is Spider-Man.
By virtue, just not as cool as Spider-Man. So,
exactly.
It's a great film. If you have any love for the Spider-Man character, Spider-Man cartoons, Spider-Man history, just love like cool looking animation. This does it all.
I spoke about it in the last episode. I actually gave the film biggest surprise. I did not change around my top 10 to include it, but I had mentioned at the top of the previous episode that, like, I don't know, like, I would have really wanted to put Spider-Man and Roma on my list. And I would have never expected that about, like, a superhero movie. Like, it's just not, you know, doesn't usually, for me, impress me. And a lot of times, like, with the animated ones, like, especially with, like, animated superhero movies, they're kind of, like, you expect them to be B-tier.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, they're, like, straight-to-video type shit. Like, I mean, there's exceptions, I guess, like Mask of the Phantasm. Like, people will still hold in really high regard.
Yeah. But
for the most part, it's like, yeah, like, that was pretty cool, like, for straight-to-video. And this movie was, like, dude, it's better than almost any superhero movie I've seen. Like, I'm still geeking out from it, from like hours, seeing it hours ago. So I'm with you, Chris. Like, I would have probably found a way to put this on my list, but I guess I'm happy that I still get to talk about the movies that I did, you know, and whatever. It's an awesome movie. My number four, also fucking inarguably awesome. At least I think I won't get no argument from you, and that is Halloween.
No argument from me.
Yeah. I mean, they could have fucked this up. I expected them to fuck this up. It didn't make any sense that Danny McBride and David Gordon Green, like the guys who get brought us like Vice Principals and Eastbound and Down and fucking like Pineapple Express, were doing Halloween. And we bitched about it on this very show.
Yep. It did not seem like the right call.
But every step along the way, like when they revealed the concept to, I'm fucking, I love this series. So like, I was like listening to interviews and shit. And it was like, the more I listened to Danny McBride talk about shit, I was like, oh wait, this guy like actually fucking loves Halloween. Like it's to the point where like, there was an interview where they're like, did you think about, like, doing a cameo, like, putting yourself in the movie? And he goes, I don't know. I thought about myself as a fan of the series and thinking about, like, I don't want to see this fucking asshole running around in a Halloween movie. I was like, you're right, dude. It's like, I don't want to see this asshole running around. Like, I don't want to see some comedic fucking actor running around in a Halloween movie. Like, yes, thank you for fucking caring about that. And just, like, all the, like, it does the smart thing and just says, we're just doing a sequel to the original, like the only good one, like really good one.
Right.
But like, it lets you know that it loves all the other movies with you because it has nods to every single one, which you pointed out when we did our review, you know, like,
Yeah, there's so many. It's so awesome.
So, for all those reasons and many more, I really, really love Halloween. And, like, you know, there's a point in my mind where I was like, this could be my film of the year just because of how much this series means to me. But there are also some really other great films, which we're going to get to. So, anyways, where are we at? Are we at top three now?
Top three.
All right, Chris.
My number three is Black Klansman.
All right, mine is the same.
It's an awesome Spike Lee movie. 70s, like, comedic biopic type thing. I love everything about it.
Yeah.
It plays with race in a smart way that isn't afraid to kind of poke at you and make you think about it. And it, there are some great nods, like even within, like we talked about in the last episode, kind of the ending shot of that film and how it brings everything back to today. But there are pieces of that script that also kind of like give nods to today and also question like, hey, like, you know, you're Jewish. Why are you hiding like behind this as a white guy? Like you should be just as brought in on this as I am. Like,
I think he says like, why are you acting like you don't have any skin in the game? Like, right. You that's know? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's another funny, I mean, not funny, it's like it's torturous actually, but it's kind of played to for some laughs in the film where it's like, oh, they would never elect somebody like David Duke into
And they almost do kind of like, I think they do kind of do like a
little like a wink to the
like, like fourth wall breaking type thing.
It's great. It's great.
It is, like, I think some people might expect it to be kind of like a boring lecture or something going into it.
Oh, no,
like,
not at all.
Like, this is going to be about important issues, you know?
It is. It is about important issues.
It absolutely is, but it's really entertaining. Really fun, like, shockingly funny. Maybe uncomfortably funny at times, but it's funny. And then also, it plays you though, like, because it's like it has you, it had the whole audience, like, out of all the movies I've seen this year, this probably had like the most reaction from the audience I saw it with. Like, people were laughing really hard at it, and then at the end, it was just like silence. Because when he drops that mic, it just hits you, like, where you're just like, oh yeah, this is not just some fun fucking time, like, this is fucking blood and people are dying and it's still happening, right? Like,
right. And then that's a,
like, he dedicates it to Heather Heyer at the end, dude. Like,
yeah,
I just remember that part right now. Like, that part, that's the part that, like, when I started crying, where it was like, rest in power to her.
It's a problem that films, particularly by white directors, have when they deal with race, is that they try to pass this thing off as like this happened in the past, like it was bad then, but they don't seem to like want to drive home and touch base with the fact that no, that shit's still happening and it's bad.
Usually they're designed to make you, or to make white people feel better about how, oh, we're not like that anymore.
Right,
but it's not. That's not the experience for most people.
And I'm glad that, like, I heard a lot of people, a lot of the criticism that I heard about like Black Klansman, were like, "Oh, it was fucking awesome," all the way up until that ending piece, right? And it's like it's a little too blunt and on the nose. It's like, but you need that because otherwise, you walk out of that film going, guess it is still shitty for those guys, but yeah, whatever. No, it's like, but yeah, for them in the '70s, like, you have to bring it forward because it's still shitty today.
It's out in the open now.
Right. Like, so there's no hiding. There's no sheets. There's no back room, back room bar.
They say it on Fox News. Yeah.
Yeah.
They say, they're poor and dirty people coming into America. It's just like, okay. I think it's an entertaining film, but an important film. And it's like a slap in the face. It's a cold bucket of water to the face saying, wake up. Like,
yep.
Totally agree. Really, really great all around. Like, you catch me on the right day, I might be like, that might be the best film of the year. But it's my number three, too. What is your number two?
My number two is Halloween.
Which we kind of touched base on, but speak your piece, if you will.
Yeah, so we've touched on this over the last couple months, but it is everything that I wanted out of a Halloween movie. As we said, like, there's such a reverence for the franchise, and I love that as creators, they looked at, like, the only way for us to save this is to blow it all up.
Yeah.
And it's not that we don't love that stuff, but it's so convoluted, so messed up, so all over the place that we can't repair it. You can't keep putting Band-Aids
on. Yeah. And, at some point it just loses the simplicity of, hey, it's just a guy that wants to kill.
Right.
And that's it. And so it makes him human again. He's not supernatural in this.
Yeah. He's like a 60-year-old dude.
Yeah.
And I love that it turns all that, but still pays homage to everything.
Yeah.
From Halloween 2 through the Rob Zombie shit.
Even 3.
Like, yeah. Like, everything is in there. Like, we love all of Halloween, and we're going to celebrate it here in this film. And I'm sure they're going to make a sequel. That movie made bank, but
I'd be surprised if it lives up to what this does.
But like, if that, just like with Creed, if this is where the series ends,
if it's
perfect.
Yeah, if it's where the series ends, it's perfect. But also, if like the next one is like kind of this quality level, I think I'll be okay with it.
Right.
But this was actually truly special. Like, this was
it was
like Creed.
Yeah, it was like Creed, exactly.
I think it was like the best explanation for it. It's like, if you understood why Creed was so special, that's why this was special. It's like, it treated everything as real and serious and made an actually good movie out of it, It was a real treat.
Yep.
My number two is Mission Impossible Fallout.
Nice.
This is a series I just got into this year. Like, I just started watching this year. And this one is probably not my personal favorite out of the series. It goes to 3, like I said, because I like the one, Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is a fucking movie god. Rest in peace.
He's a great villain.
Yeah. He was so good in it. And the story was so basic and simple. And the motivation was so simple. It's like, I will kill your wife. It just had that basicness to it that, like, you're just like, all right, I'm invested. I'm fucking strapped in, ready to watch, right? I think this is, by the time we're at Fallout now, the series has become very convoluted and insane with its plot. But it's almost kind of part of the joke at this point, where it's just like, there's so much bullshit going on. Even then, though, like, even with that bullshit, it's still kind of basic in a way. Like, you could go into this being your first film and probably figure out, for the most part, it functions in both ways like that, right?
It is tied, like, all 3, 4, 5, and 6 all tie together.
And there's a bunch of nonsense and a lot of characters, but you can still watch the movie be entertained.
Much like a Bond movie, it is standalone in a way that it can still be enjoyable without knowing all
of
that lore. That adds to it, just like if you
definitely
know things about James Bond and, you know, the characters he interacts with over the course of that series, that adds to the experience for you, but you don't need to, like, you could sit down and watch a James Bond movie at any point in time and still enjoy it. And they've done that perfectly here. Delivering something that is, I think, better than any Bond movie to date.
I mean, I think any of these movies are better. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not a Bond fan. I think any of these are better. Like, even, well, maybe not the first two, but any of the, anything after the first two are way better. I avoided this series because I thought it would be like Bond or just, you know, some bullshit I wouldn't care about. And as soon as I started with part three, honestly, and I was like, honestly, fucking blown away. I was like, that's one of the best action movies I've ever seen. And I maintain that. It's like top five. But this one, like, while I don't think it, like, has as good a plot as three, like, the plot is almost besides the point. Like, the main point of these movies is doing practical action.
Yeah, it's now to, like, see what crazy shit we can have Tom Cruise do.
Yes. Like he might kill himself for our entertainment at some point. Honestly, from, like, because he's really doing this shit. You know, yes, they do add stuff in post, but, like, they are really doing these stunts in real locations, and, like, that's something special. I think, like, most movies don't do that at all, and for have like this movie doing the biggest, craziest action, like, in stunts, and it's actually real. That's something special, man. So, like, if you would have, like, at the beginning of this year told me that, like, my number two movie of the year would be Mission Impossible Fallout, I'd be like, what? Because, like, I've never seen any of them, and I was, like, opposed to it, but then I just gave them a chance, and now I'm just like, that's honestly one of the best action movies I've ever seen. Great score too in Fallout.
Yeah.
As well as a ton of huge set pieces. All right, Chris.
It's the moment,
are we,
huh?
Are we all right, man?
We are at the number one films.
What's for your both movie of the us. Year? Yeah.
My movie of the year is A Star Is Born.
My face is melting right now.
I was blown away by it. It is a near perfect movie, I think. Bradley Cooper does such an excellent job in everything, the filming of the musical scenes to the dramatic scenes, to interspersing them, and then to having the performance that he is able to coax out of Lady Gaga. She seems so just purely natural that I honestly did not, like, you know, when we talked about the best actress, and I said she was my pick for best actress of the year. I did not think she was capable of such a thing. We know Bradley Cooper is a great actor. Like, we've seen him in plenty of films before where he's acted great, and we've seen him pull people through as well. But in a lot of ways, Lady Gaga owns this film. Like, Bradley Cooper's acting and his character is fantastic, and that character is riveting.
I was going to say, I thought he did good too. He did a good job.
Yeah. But she is, like, the reason for this film, and seeing her, like, her character's rise to stardom, and seeing Bradley Cooper's star fade is it's heartbreaking in a way. And then there's that fucking dog. yeah, it's I loved it. It's one that I could see myself watching over and over again. I know it is the fourth film to bear that name. I've not seen any of the other three,
But, are you like inspired now to go see them, or are you just like happy?
I have no desire to go see them. So I can't believe that they would.
Christofferson or some bullshit. Like, come on, what?
And I'm sure they are fine for their time. But this is our time. It hits right now. It's a perfect little tale.
I am like genuinely surprised by your pick. Well, like I did think about it at one point during this. I'm like, is he gonna pick Star Wars Born? But like I was like, no. I don't know, like I liked it a lot too. And when I came out of the theater, like I was like really impressed by certain things. I was really impressed by the performances that Bradley Cooper got out of the actors. Like, I think that's one thing that like shows sometimes when actors transition into directors is like they know how to fucking direct actors. And he does, like, dude, he turns Dice Clay into a fucking really sympathetic figure here. You know what I mean? So I guess I'm not totally surprised, but I am kind of surprised because I'm just kind of like, I don't know, that movie was kind of, it felt like a, I don't know if it's cliche, like I'm not trying to be mean to say cliche, but like,
in a way it is, though.
It's like a standard story, like an archetypal story.
It is. Know? I mean, it is the fourth version of this movie.
Yeah. So I guess,
like, but
objectively, a story that's been done before.
Yeah. Multiple times over.
But I'm not trying to say that in a mean way. I'm just like, that's why I'm like surprised by it or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, and maybe some of it is coming to it without having seen those other iterations of it. But I was just pulled in by both of their performances.
The music too.
And the music is great. Like, yeah, it really is. Like, I think if the music had not been as good, this film does not work as well. Like, because you need those songs that they feel contemporary. Like, they feel like something that you'd want to listen to, and I have over the course of the year. So.
See, like, all right. So for me, there's the I'm off the deep end, blah, 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 blah. Like, so, like, what song is that? Like,
that's Shallow.
Okay. And then there's the other song. I think there's, like, another song in the trailer. It's, like, two big songs. But then there's, like, some stuff that's, like, I don't know, like, when she goes pop or whatever, it's just kind of throwaway. I think.
Yeah, like, some of that stuff isn't.
And it's meant to be. Like, it's meant to not be good.
Right, it's legitimately written to be, like, mediocre in a way that is just, like, you know, it's not. It's not supposed to be that those big pieces, but yeah, I think like Shallow, which is that their big duet,
it's a great song kind
of thing. Maybe It's Time, which is the one that he
yes, that's
acoustically.
I think that's the other one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, there's some other ones as well that really kind of like I think are just great songs, like Always Remember Us This Way is I think really good. Out of Time, which is kind of it's like just this guitar thing, like it's like 2.5 minutes of just like kind of like jamming.
Is it like the beginning of the movie when like they're first coming out on stage?
Yeah, I think he's just like kind of going off.
Like, is that what it's from, like the beginning of the soundtrack and shit too, or no?
It's not from the beginning of the soundtrack. It's after Maybe It's Time. Okay. There's another one, Alibi, which I think is it's another Bradley Cooper one, and then there's that final,
like it's like a ballad by her or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, that's
good.
Yeah, like I mean,
it grew on me. It grew up like I think I said it sounded like a Whitney Houston song to me. It still does, but like
a little bit, yeah.
Those songs grow on you, you know, like they're so they're like earworms, you know, that grow on you.
Yeah, it's like you keep listening. It's like, you know, that is really good. And you just kind of sticks. So, there are scenes that just like stick out to me.
Sam Rockwell in the driveway, baby.
Sam Rockwell is great throughout that entire the entire thing, he's great. That slimy ass agent that she has,
telling him he's a dick bag. Yeah. You're like, you're a piece of shit. You should kill yourself.
Yeah, I fucking hate him so much. Like,
I mean, scene I'll remember is him pissing himself.
Yeah,
I mean, it's terrible. Like, that was like horrifying. Like, you're horrified for her while it's happening. Yeah. You're like, oh no, how can you do that to her?
It's insane. But it's, yeah, I think that they do such a good job with it. I will not be surprised if it takes home a few awards over the Golden Globes and the Oscars. But I do hope that it does not sweep everything. Yes. And I don't think it will.
Like I'm cool if it wins some awards. Like, I'm cool if Lady Gaga wins, but I'm not cool if it like wins. Like, if it wins Best Picture, I'm sorry, Chris. I'll be mad at you. I'll be like, this is your fault.
Well, I'm hearing Vice is a front runner for that right now, but that's not one that I am going to get to see until probably well into 2019.
Vice will not win it. Trying to figure out what will win it, but it's not that. I would say Roma. Honestly, once you see Roma too, you might understand that, but I think that might go to the foreign language category.
Okay.
Since it is foreign language, so. But it's like, it's honestly so good. If I were Netflix, I would be like, no, this is Best Picture. Like, I don't care what language it is, you know?
Right.
That's how my position, if I was Netflix, I'd be like, what film are you going to throw up against it? Because, like, dude, that is like an ultimate Oscar movie. Anyways.
So what do you have as your number one film of the year, Jeff?
My number one is Sorry to Bother You.
Nice. And,
directed by Boots Riley. We've talked about it a bunch over the last two episodes.
Yeah.
It was just, it was the most like elated I felt leaving the theater in terms of just like everything I just saw was like new and smart and clever. It was just, this is like a wildly like original, like offbeat comedy, you know? Yeah. Like it's just everything I thought I knew what I was going into it. Like, I'm like, oh, it's going to be about this guy, like this black guy who goes into telemarketing and he uses his white voice and it like helps him excel. And like, yeah, that's like part of it, but that's like only really the beginning. And that's all like really show in the trailer. And we discussed the twist and like the previous episode, but basically to learn that this is actually a film about how corporations like exploit workers and how it's like a totally like, it is like above all else to me, like Sorry to Bother You is a pro-union film. Like, that's the point of it. Like, if you don't think that's the point of it, watch it again. And like, with that in mind, then you would definitely agree with me, because like, they literally like say it. It's like about, the lesson that he learns in the film is that he needs to be on the side of the workers, and it's not all about money. It's about like everyone having a piece of the pie or whatever. Like, that's the message of the film. And I'm just like, that's not a message. That's a message that Hollywood is more afraid of than anything, that any big business doesn't want to put out, you know?
Well, sure. I mean, it's, over the last, you know, 15, 20 years, our culture has like demonized unions.
Yeah.
Dramatically.
And it's just, you know, even the, like, say MSNBC, which is supposedly the most liberal network ever, it's like, they're still pro corporate. Like, they're still not really on the side of the working class, because they are the people with all the money. You know what I mean? Like, it's just the fact of it. Like, and to have this movie like perfectly express that, and to be like, this is a serious problem that like we need to address before they turn us all into fucking horses. And to do it, you know, to make it funny and like, I don't know. To me, like, I really appreciated that. But on top of that, yeah, like, it's funny. Like, it has an awesome soundtrack. It has an awesome color palette. I love Lakeith Stanfield in it. Like, I love Tessa Thompson as his girlfriend. Even Steve Yeun, I forgot. I don't know how to say his name. Yeah. He's in The Walking Dead. He's actually been in a bunch of, like, films lately. He's really good as, like, this the guy who's, like, the union organizer slash possible love interest, too. Like, I love everything about this movie. I love this fucking shitty car that our main character drives around in, and they have the fucking windshield wipers with the fucking rope attached that they have to pull on it. Like, the animated short in the film, like, the twists, you know, I just, everything about it, like, and like I think I said to you last week or the week before that, like every time, like, I've watched it three times now, and every time it's like I'm catching more things, and I'm like, I'm understanding it even more. It's just a fun movie. Like, yeah. it's just a breath of fresh air, and nothing really quite excited me as much. And again, like, it's just the fact that, like, here's what I'm going to guarantee you. Next year, there's not going to be a movie about how there needs to be unions. Like, it's just not a movie that comes out that often. There's, like, Norma Rae and this. It's the only two movies about that. So for that alone, like, it would put me, like, high on my list. But, like, just because it just feels so effortlessly full of ideas like that. I just can't wait to see what Boots Riley does next. But it was a hell of a fucking debut film.
Yeah, and a ton of fun. I'm glad that got out to go see it in theaters and support it, because too many people did not get that chance. So,
I mean, it did. I remember looking it up at some point. Like, it was a pretty low budget film. It was only like a couple million bucks, and it did do, like, I think at the end of the day, like, 20 million at the box office. That's so
pretty good.
You know, he has a future, but like, it should have made bigger waves in terms, like, right now, I'm not hearing it talked about as much for award season, but it should be up, in my opinion, it should be up for best screenplay at the very fucking least. Best original screenplay? Come on, man. Like, you're crazy if you don't nominate that.
Agreed.
But anyways, those are our, you know, our films. So, film of the year, I gave it to Sorry to Bother You. Chris, you gave it to A Star Is Born.
Yep.
We want to do a quick, fast read rundown of our top 10. Do you have your list in front of you? You can do it quick.
Yeah.
All right. Do your 10 through 1.
Creed 2 at 10. A Quiet Place at 9. A Simple Favor at 8. Widows at 7. First Man at 6. Mission Impossible Fallout at 5. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse at 4. Black Klansman at 3. Halloween at 2, and A Star Is Born at number 1.
It's awesome. Here's my list. Mandy at 10, The Ritual at 9, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs at 8, Minding the Gap at 7, Three Identical Strangers at 6, The Night Comes for Us at 5, Halloween at 4, Black Klansman at 3, Mission Impossible Fallout at 2, and Sorry to Bother You for my film of the year. Chris, it's been a hell of a year at the movies. It's been a lot of fun doing this show. I'll see you in the new year.
Yep. All new movies.
Glass.
Movie dudes. Do-do-do-do.